Good morning. Welcome, everyone. Is there an echo?
Yes.
Are we good? Is that better? Okay. Thanks to everyone for joining us here in Sacramento and those of you who are joining us remotely. I'm Janet Hansen, the chair of the State Historical Resources Commission, and I'm calling this meeting of August 8th to order at 9 o'clock a.m. There we go. Today's meeting of the State Historical Resources Commission has been duly noticed. All of the agenda items are subject to action by the commission. Now, would you please stand as you are able and join in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. All right. I think we're going to take things slightly out of order. I'm going to have State Historic Preservation Officer Julie Polanco do the welcome in place of Armando Quintero, who could not be with us today. So, Julie.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Good morning, everyone. Director Quintero sends his regrets that he's not with us today, but he asked that I read his statement, and we'll start by welcoming our newest commissioner, Neil I. Payton, FAIA. Neil, welcome. So happy you're with us. Neil joined the commission last month. He's a senior principal with Torti Gallus Partners in Santa Monica since 1996. He's served on various boards and commissions, including now on the City of Santa Monica Historic Preservation Landmarks Commission. Thank you. He is involved in suburban infill and refill and transit-oriented development, earned his master's degree from Syracuse University and bachelor's of architecture from Carnegie Mellon. We're really delighted and excited to have Neil with us, and we look forward to a long and robust association as we move forward with the commission. So welcome, Neil. We also would like to acknowledge Luis Hoyos has left the commission. His dedicated service from the commission started in 2002 to 2006 and then again in 2017 until recently. We'd like to thank him for his service, for bringing his expertise to the commission. Our state historic preservation has always been in good hands with Luis, as he was for 25 years with the California State Polytechnic Cal Poly in Pomona, and served in the Joint Architecture and Development Studio at UCLA. Luis has been a mentor and a friend to many students and colleagues, particularly those at the dais. We wish him and his family well as he goes on to the next adventure in his architecture, career, and travel. The director also wanted me to give some park updates about some state historic parks. As we know, the Bidwell Mansion in Chico suffered at the hands of an arsonist in December of last year. Recently, a contractor began to clean up the fire damage exterior debris. They're working on a plan to rehabilitate the interior of the property and also have public and stakeholder engagement processes established to talk about what the fate of the next steps are and how that amazing historic resource will be brought back for public use. And we also had the opportunity to tour Will Rogers State Park and Pacific Palisades post-fire. Tara Lynch and I were happy to be there and see the progress that was made. Cleanup operations wind down there now as the park's trails and other areas are expected to reopen later this year. State Parks continues to plan for the park's future with the assistance of the public and stakeholders. And also that there'll be several events and opportunities for participation to talk about the future of that park and its use. Of note, last week the state parks returned several cultural items belonging to the Big Valley Band of Pomo Indians. Many of these repatriated items were received by state parks as legacy donations many, many years ago and were housed for a time at the State Indian Museum State Historic Park. The items included 21 baskets, regalia, and other cultural items. It was the first repatriation from the museum in over a decade in compliance with the Native American Graves Repatriation Act, a U.S. federal law that sees institution returning these items to the most likely descendants. The museum also curated a new exhibit called Welcome Home, a Celebration, that communicates the joy and the empowerment of repatriation. I want to just sort of on a personal note say we met in the museum yesterday. That exhibit is very, very well done and very moving. I encourage anybody who has the opportunity to stop by and see it. But most importantly, I think the dedication that State Parks has to really understanding and embracing the obligation and the opportunity to work with our partners in repatriation. And I'm so appreciative for that, and that it will happen more and more as we go forward with the return of those items to our tribal communities. And with that, I'd just like to say thank you to staff for getting us to this meeting. We've had a lot going on, and their dedication and hard work will see a very easy and seamless meeting. And so I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge Amy, William, Caleb, Monica up there in the Netherlands, and Jody. Thank you. That's all.
All right. Now we're going to go to the introduction of commissioners and staff. As I mentioned previously, I'm Janet Hansen. I am from Palm Springs. I'm the chair of the commission this year, and I represent the discipline of history on the commission. And now I think we'll start with our newest commissioner, Neil. We already heard a bit about you, but if you just want to do another self-introduction.
Can't imagine, but I thank you for. Oh, I pushed this.
Yeah.
I'm honored. I'm Neil Payton. I'm honored to have been appointed here. It was a great day in the workshop yesterday. I felt really immersed. It was a great presentation by staff. I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hess.
My name is Alan Hess. I'm an architect, and I represent architectural history on the commission. I am from Irvine, California.
Commissioner Adams.
Good morning. My name is Lee Adams. I reside in Downeyville in Sierra County, and I represent the public on the commission.
Commissioner Cerrero.
Good morning. My name is Adam Cerrero. I'm an archaeologist. I am from Culver City, and I represent archaeology on the commission.
And last but not least, Commissioner Brandis.
Good morning. Brian Brandis. Represent the public. Currently living in Oakland.
And our vice chair, Valena Wythe, is not able to be with us today. So, Julie, could you please introduce your staff?
Yes. At the table, we have Amy Crane and William Berg of our award-winning registration unit. We have Caleb and Monica up in the Heatherlands. They're getting welcoming people, greeting people, and keeping us organized. Jody Brown to my left, our deputy SHPO and tribal liaison, and Tara Lynch, our amazing chief counsel. Thank you.
All right. We are moving on to item 5 on the agenda, resolutions for National History Day California. And the State Historical Resources Commission is pleased to present California Historic Places Awards to 3 outstanding students who participated in the 2025 National History Day in California. History Day is an annual event for students in grades 4 to 12. This year's theme, Rights and Responsibilities in History, challenged students to engage in historical research and inquiry on a topic of their choice within that theme and to use the information to create a History Day project. Commissioners were provided with online links to the projects as well as project description in the students' own words. So I'm presenting awards to, again, 3 students, Ashley Wang, and Max and Sean Castropel. Ashley is here with us today. We're very excited about that. So I'm going to come down with SHPO Polanco and read your resolution to you, if you want to step over here. And then we will have you make a few comments. Make sure I got the right one. Okay, this is resolution number 2025-01, Resolution of Recognition to Ashley Wang. Whereas in 2025, Ashley Wang participated in the National History Day California competition as a student at the Branson School in Ross, Marin County, and whereas the theme of this year's competition, Rights and Responsibilities in History, asked students to consider how the relationship between rights and responsibilities has developed over time, impacting people and their societies. In choosing a topic, students were asked to think about the rights of people, the responsibilities or duties to protect those rights, and the role of government and institutions in defining rights and responsibilities. And whereas Ashley's project entitled Separate and Unequal, How African Americans Were Chased Out of the Neighborhood and the Classroom, was entered into the Senior Individual Documentary category and was selected for a California Historic Places Award. And whereas California Historic Places Award recipients receive a resolution from the State Historical Resources Commission, a $100 check from the California Preservation Foundation, and a copy of the book, The Historic Preservation Movement in California, from the Office of Historic Preservation for the school library. Now, therefore, be it resolved that official recognition on behalf of the State Historical Resources Commission is given to Ashley Wang for an outstanding 2025 National History Day in California, and be it further resolved that this resolution be recorded in the minutes of the State Historical Resources Commission and a suitable copy presented to Ashley Wang, August 8th, 2025. Signed by myself and Shippo Polanco. Thank you. Congratulations. This is for you. Do we want to take a
congratulations?
Pose? Should we
thank
do
you
a
so much.
Should,
okay, yeah, let's have
do you want to pose? Let me take these off. There we go.
We make you official.
All right, and we welcome you to make a few words.
Good morning, everyone. First, I would like to thank everyone on the commission for recognizing my documentary with this great honor. The California Historic Places Award means a lot to my project because local and state history was something that I really set out to highlight and preserve. My documentary, Separate and Unequal, How African Americans Were Chased Out of the Neighborhood and the Classroom, focused on the historical link between institutionalized and societal housing discrimination and the educational inequities that continue to linger today. Although a very national topic, I focused on Marin City, a historically black enclave created by World War II and racially restrictive covenants, and the children there who were sent to neighboring Town Mill Valley's Tamalpais High School with their majority white peers. I want to say a huge thank you to Felicia Gaston and Paul Austin, two Marin City residents and advocates who opened up their lives and thoughts to me in interviews and contributed to the arc of my documentary. And a thank you to Bridge the Gap, a Marin City educational nonprofit that welcomed my speech program for their middle school students as a remedy for some of my findings. And although I'd be happy to share much more about my project, I wanted to spend my short time today highlighting some more current actions. First, California passed Assembly Bill 1466 in 2021 that required each county to identify and redact all remaining restrictive covenants that bar people of color from buying homes. This is because although racially restrictive covenants are unlawful, they continue to exist in deeds if not contested. Many counties, including Marin, are now working on restrictive covenants projects that rely heavily on volunteers. It can be as simple as looking through your own housing deed, and I highly encourage anyone interested to get involved. Second, I would like to highlight a few resources that were a great help for my research. First, a huge shout out to the Marin History Museum and the Marin County Library's History Rooms and Archives. Local history museums and societies are such treasure troves and are extremely underexplored. I would also like to highlight UC Riverside's California Digital Newspaper Collection. They have digitized so many historical collections from the SF Chronicle to even the high school newspaper that I was looking at. Unfortunately, due to federal funding cuts, the CDNC has been operating much slower than before, so I hope that I can inspire any of you to check it out and support all of these great resources that have been vital for sparking my passion in history and hopefully can continue to exist for many generations beyond. Finally, a huge thank you to everyone who supported me, from these great resources to my parents, teachers, and mentors, and the California History Day organization. I'm so grateful to have been able to explore and spread awareness to a story so close to home and so relevant to our current day. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I think we're going to give the next resolution to Sean and Max first, and then following his comments, if any of the commissioners would like to comment, we will do that to tie things up. So we're going to move on to Resolution 2025-2, and I think Max and Sean are online, and they'll be joining us via Zoom. So I'm going to read their resolution of recognition. To Max Castropel and Sean Castropel. Whereas in 2025, Max Castropel and Sean Castropel participated in the National History Day California competition as students at Sierra Vista Middle School in Irvine, Orange County, and whereas the theme of this year's competition, Rights and Responsibilities in History, asks students to consider how the relationship between rights and responsibilities has developed over time, impacting people and their societies. In choosing a topic, students were asked to think about the rights of people, the responsibilities or duty to protect those rights, and the role of government and institutions in defining rights and responsibilities. And whereas Max and Sean's project entitled Rights and Responsibilities, the Hetch Hetchy Dam and its Environmental Impact was entered into the Junior Group website category and was selected for a California Historic Places Award. And whereas his California Historic Places Award recipients receive a resolution from the State Historical Resources Commission, a $100 check from the California Preservation Foundation, and a copy of the book, The Historic Preservation Movement in California, from the Office of Historic Resources for the school library, now therefore be it resolved that official recognition on behalf of the State Historical Resources Commission is given to Max Castropel and Sean Castropel for an outstanding 2025 National History Day in California entry. And be it further resolved that this resolution be recorded in the minutes of the State Historical Resources Commission and a suitable copy presented to Max Castropel and Sean Castropel on, this is August 8th, 2025. And before we hear from them, I did want to mention that Max and Sean went on to the national level awards where they won first place in the junior group website. So, Jody, are we ready? Oh, there they are.
Okay, so first of all, I want to thank you guys so much for giving us this Historic Place Award and giving us the opportunity to talk about our project. So when we first started this project, like last year, when we first learned about the theme, Rights and Responsibilities, we wanted to do a project on how human demands impacted the environment. And so we researched about habitat loss in the environment, which led us to the Hetch Hetchy Dam, which we really thought was a significant project because we actually used to live in the Northern California area where that water was being supplied to. And we remember how the water was exceptionally clear compared to where we currently live in Irvine, Southern California.
So when doing research on this project, we figured out that Hetch Hetchy wasn't always part of the Yosemite Park boundary, because when Yosemite was still a state park, Hetch Hetchy wasn't actually included within that boundary. However, once Yosemite became a national park, Hetch Hetchy was included, which caused all this controversy. This led to the conservation movement and the creation of the National Park Service, which helps to use conservation and preservationism in order to balance environmental responsibility and human rights. So we'd like to thank you for having us here, and we love representing California and the Hetch Hetchy Dam story, and I think that's all we have to say for our project.
Thank you both. So, yeah, congratulations to all of you. Great work. Hope this is the beginning of maybe of a lifelong interest in history. And as one of our Commissioner Cerrero has pointed out in previous presentations, that maybe we'll see one or more of you up here someday. So I think, do any of the commissioners have any comments they want to make before we close? Yes.
I watched your film twice. The first time I couldn't believe what I was watching. It was so amazing that a high school person did this. I was familiar with the story at a national level, but certainly not at the Marin local level, which actually was, I was surprised by the story. But I was actually particularly moved by the first-person accounts, the archival research you did, super professional historical research, also extremely well-made documentary film. So I don't know if you have an interest in history or you have an interest in documentary filmmaking or possibly both, but it strikes me that that's a really good thing you're doing there. So really major props. And the website, I was also really quite moved. I mean, again, a history that I was not familiar with, and the ability to sort of put together, connect the dots between an event, a kind of, let's say, mapping event, and then a whole national movement was, for two young men in middle school, pretty amazing work. So congrats to you guys both. All right.
Thank you, Commissioner Payton. Any other commissioners? Commissioner Hess.
First of all, I just wanted to do a shout out to Max and Sean in North Park, Irvine. I live in University Park, not too far away. And you certainly are representative of the fine school districts and the teaching and education that we have in Irvine. Regarding Ashley and your project, again, also, I was very impressed by the quality of the presentation. It's one thing to do the research, which is so important, but then to put it in a form where people can understand it is a real skill. I'm glad to see you're well on the way to having that talent. I'd also just like to point out for the commission, of course, that Marin City, that's the focus of her, her film, is on the National Register. It was, I believe, around 2017, and I think before I was on the commission, but you visited it, and it is an extraordinary piece of architecture by Aaron Green and John Carl Warnicke. It was involved in its own controversies also at the time. So the story that you are telling here has many different facets, more than you could get into, I know, in one, but there's certainly so much that needs to be known. So I appreciate you bringing that to our attention. Thanks.
Anyone else? All right. Well, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate all of your time, and we're just so excited for all of you. All right. Where are we? Okay, I think today the next item is commission and staff reports, and I don't. There's no chairperson's report today. Do you, Julie? You already gave a report earlier.
Right. We don't really have anything more to just say that we're continuing to work on the statewide plan. We've taken a bit of a pause to get some things in order, and then. At the next meeting, we'll bring some more information back about a little bit of a more robust direction, and we'll have an update on the single system for CRIS at the next meeting. The contract is in place for the next piece, and we'll have a bit more information as it's a little bit further along about where we're going with it and some timelines. So we'll bring that to you at the next commission meeting in November. That's all. Thank you.
All right, we're going to move on, and I'm going to read some general notes on the public participation for today's meeting. For all wishing to speak today, if you're attending the meeting in person and wish to speak on an item, please fill out a speaker card and hand it to staff at the table. If you are joining virtually and wish to comment on one of the agenda items or during the open comment period, you must be using Zoom or calling in by phone. If you indicated the item for which you wish to speak, you will be called on during that time in the order registered. If you did not indicate an item, you may raise your hand during the public comment for the item, and you will be called on to speak. If you are currently watching the webcast on calspan.org and wish to comment, please register using the link at https://oHP.parks.ca.gov/?page_ID=21372. Go to the bottom of the page and click on via this link under Zoom registration. An email with a link and phone number will be sent to you once you have registered. For each discussion and action item, which we have one today, the commission will take testimony in the following order. The nominator gets 10 minutes, property owner or their designee gets 10 minutes, a district property owner or designee 5 minutes, local, state, federal, tribal governments 5 minutes, and the public 3 minutes. Speakers who require a translator will be allocated twice the time otherwise allocated. After registered attendees speak on specific agenda items, anyone else who did not previously register and wishes to speak on that agenda item will be asked to raise their hand. If you call on the telephone, press *9 to raise your hand. Each speaker will be called and allowed to speak. The speaker will then need to unmute themselves. If calling in by phone, you do this by pressing *6. Please note, phone-only speakers will not appear by video. The consent calendar will be taken in a single motion. Once the commission has concluded voting, public comments will be taken. Those speaking on the consent calendar items will have 3 minutes to speak. If anyone wishes to speak about an item not on the agenda, they may do so under public comment, which is later in this meeting. Each speaker will have 3 minutes. I ask all speakers, commissioners, and staff to please state your name for the record before you speak, and if you're speaking on behalf of an organization, state the organization's name. During public testimony, there will be a timer on the screen. For those calling in by phone, you are reminded when you have 1 minute remaining. If you have any technical difficulties, please call or text to area code 805-801-3576 or email it@agpvideo.com and an IT person will assist you. A note for the commissioners, if anyone needs to step away, please state that you are leaving temporarily so we can ensure that we have a quorum. So we're going to be moving on to item 7 on your agenda, the consent calendar. The commission will consider items on the calendar in a single motion without prior public comment. Public comments will be welcome after the vote has concluded. Any person requesting an item be removed from the consent calendar in order to comment before the vote, please complete the speaker registration card and give it to staff at the back of the room. For those joining remotely, please raise your hand to indicate you would like to make a request. If such a request is made, the item will be removed from the consent calendar and heard by the commission at the end of the discussion and action section. So are there any member of the audience who requests a nomination be withdrawn from the consent calendar? And Jody, no one? Okay. Is there any commissioner who requests that a nomination be withdrawn from the consent calendar? Is there any commissioner who wishes to recuse him or herself from hearing the consent calendar? Are there any commissioners who wish to disclose discussion with any parties on matters listed on the consent calendar? No, okay. The Office of Historic Preservation staff will now present information about each of the properties on the consent calendar, and thanks to William and Amy.
The Henry O. Bowman House is a two-story residence designed in the Mayan Revival style. The house, L-shaped in plan, is constructed of concrete blocks and wood-framed walls clad with stucco. Decorative concrete, which has been covered with stucco parging since original construction, is present at the upper balconies and along the edge of the second floor of the main west facade. The house has flat roofs. The main door is located near the center of the west facade. Multi-light fixed wood windows and wood casement windows are present throughout. An attached garage located on the north side of the house is set back from the main facade. At the interior, exposed concrete block is present at the first floor. The house fronts Ogden Drive with a generally flat mown turf lawn in the front yard and decorative plantings near the house. A concrete ribbon lane, sometimes known as a Hollywood driveway, leads from the street to the garage along the north side of the property. The house retains all aspects of historic integrity and continues to convey its historic architectural character. The house is nominated for listing on the National Register of Historic Places at the local level of significance under criterion C in the area of architecture as a property that embodies the distinctive characteristics of a method of construction. The fourth house designed by architect Lloyd Wright, the Henry O. Bowman House was one of the first, if not the first, building to utilize the knit block system he developed, which incorporates steel bars to tie together concrete blocks. Lloyd Wright later collaborated with his father, Frank Lloyd Wright, to further develop this system, which both architects used in later designs. The period of significance is 1923, the year of construction. The property is nominated by a consultant on behalf of the owner. The Cultural Heritage Commission, in its role as representative of the City of Los Angeles, a certified local government, received a copy of the nomination. No letters have been received. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine the Henry O. Bowman House is eligible at the local level of significance under National Register Criterion C with a 1923 period of significance. The Los Angeles County Law Library occupies a rectangular-shaped property on First Street between Hill Street and Broadway in downtown Los Angeles. The library building is part of a grouping of government buildings organized along a mall that comprise the Los Angeles Civic Center. The late modern style building includes an original portion on the south, completed in 1953, and an addition on the north, completed in 1971. The building is multi-storied with an irregular plan that reflects its internal uses. The various rectangular volumes range from 2 to 6 stories in height. The building is of reinforced concrete construction with flat roofs over short spans and steel truss roofs over long spans. Flat parapet walls surround the roofs and define the volumes. The exterior is architectural concrete that has been painted and features a granite base, ceramic panels along Broadway on the east, and exposed aggregate concrete panels facing the mall on the north and Hill Street on the west. The property also contains a non-contributing utilitarian parking garage on the west, completed in 1971. Minimally altered, the library building retains historic integrity of location, design, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association. The integrity of setting has been lost as the original landscaping was replaced and a new plaza was created after the period of significance. The property is nominated for listing on the National Register of Historic Places under criteria A and C. Under criterion A, at the state level of significance in the areas of law and education, the library is the largest county law library in California. Its foreign and international law collection, including rare books, manuscripts, and historical documents, sets it apart from other public law libraries in the state. In addition to serving the courts and legal service providers throughout the state, the library is an important resource for the public and self-represented litigants. Under criterion C, at the local level of significance in the area of architecture, the building is an excellent example of the late modern style, reflected in its composition of solid rectangular volumes that successfully resolve the needs of the library and the topography of the property. Additionally, the building is significant as an important work of the architectural firm of Austin, Field & Fry. The firm is recognized as a master of modern architecture, particularly when it comes to Los Angeles government buildings. The period of significance is 1953 to 1971, which corresponds with the year the building was originally completed through a major addition. The property is nominated by a consultant on behalf of the owner. The Cultural Heritage Commission, in its role as representative of the City of Los Angeles, a certified local government, received a copy of the nomination. Two letters of support have been received. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine the Los Angeles County Law Library is eligible at the state level of significance under National Register Criterion A and at the local level of significance under Criterion C, with a 1953 to 1971 period of significance. Corona Foothill Ranch is on the south side of the city of Corona, on the west side of Foothill Parkway, approximately 1 mile north of Corona's city circle and 1 mile south of Cleveland National Forest. The former agricultural area has transitioned into a primarily residential community. The district is a 4.5-acre remnant of a ranch that originally encompassed 900 acres and later expanded to approximately 2,530 acres through land purchases and corporate acquisitions. California ranch-style residential buildings, as well as industrial, utilitarian, and agricultural buildings and structures, were constructed between 1904 and 1966. Three residences are single-story, and the fourth residence, the Call Ranch House, is a two-story farmhouse of similar period and construction. Moved to the rear corner of the district in 2005 with the view of the Lemon Grove, the setting is similar to its original location. 20 contributing resources include 15 buildings, 3 sites, and 2 structures. The property as a whole is in good condition and retains integrity of location, design, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association. The district is nominated for listing on the National Register of Historic Places at the local level of significance under Criterion A in the areas of agriculture and commerce, for its association with the early citrus agricultural industry in Riverside County, Corona Foothill Lemon Company founder Samuel Betts Hampton and board member Asa Frank Call, and the company's impact on the region's development during the early 20th century. The 1911 to 1966 period of significance begins with incorporation of the company and construction of the first building and ends with closure of the packing house. As a district in which only a single building was moved, representing a small percentage of typical buildings, Corona Foothill Ranch does not need to meet criteria consideration B moved properties. The district is nominated by the owner. 14 letters of support have been received. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine Corona Foothill Ranch is eligible at the local level of significance under National Register Criterion A with a 1911 to 1966 period of significance. The Tognini and Getzi Building is a well-preserved early 20th century commercial-style building on Cayucas's Main Street, North Ocean Avenue. The two-story flat-roof concrete and stucco building was constructed in 1907 under the direction of Achille B. Tognini and Carlo Getzi to replace a wood frame building that originally stood in this location. The building faces southwest with almost no setback from the street. A projecting cornice surrounds the roofline of the building with more ornate detailing on the southern facade. Based on aerial maps, one of the two outbuildings was present during the period of significance and the other postdates the period of significance. The main building is less than 500 feet from the Cayucos Pier, the primary structure that anchors the town of Cayucos. Surrounded by other commercial and retail businesses, the building is in the heart of downtown and retains all aspects of integrity. The building is nominated for listing on the National Register of Historic Places at the local level of significance under Criterion A in the area of commerce as a long-standing location of business in the town of Cayucas. Originally a mercantile and general store established by Tognini and Getzi, the building played an important role in the commercial history of Cayucas as the town developed into an important trading center on California's central coast, with the development of the Cayucos Pier and the local dairy industry. As a location that provided goods and services to the people of Cayucos, the building was an important location of commerce for the town, including where telephone services were located for a long period of time. The building served the town as a general store and later a grocery store as the economy of Cayucos changed. The building is also eligible under Criterion C in the area of architecture as a well-preserved, reinforced concrete, early 20th century commercial-style building that retains its character-defining features, including large transoms, recessed storefront entryway, and large interior volume with original mezzanine. The period of significance begins in 1907, when construction was complete, and closes in 1967, when Carlo Getzi sold the building. The property is nominated by a consultant on behalf of the owner. No letters have been received. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine the Tognini and Getze building is eligible at the local level of significance under National Register Criterion A with a 1907 to 1967 period of significance. The consent calendar continues with William Berg's Huntington Hotel.
The Huntington Hotel, located at 1075 California Street in San Francisco's Nob Hill neighborhood, is a 12-story, including basement and penthouse, brick and terracotta hotel building. The Italian Renaissance Revival-style building was constructed in 1924, designed by the architecture firm of Weeks and Day, and displays a base shaft capital composition at the exterior, complete with a terracotta and brick base at the first and second floor levels, brick shaft at the third through tenth floor levels, and terracotta and brick capital at the 11th to 12th floors. Additional Italian Renaissance Revival elements include the roof's hipped clay tile segments. Other noteworthy features of the building exterior include the rooftop billboard sign that reads Hotel Huntington. At the interior of the building, the lobby is decorated with travertine flooring, decorative plaster ceilings, and elevator doors and surrounds. The historic primary stairway, with wood newel posts and a wood railing with decorative iron balusters, extends vertically through the building. The upper floors of the hotel consist of office and guest room spaces accessed via a double-loaded L-shaped corridor and are generally identical, with similar layouts and finishes throughout. The building is in good condition and retains all seven aspects of historic integrity. The building continues to reflect its Italian Renaissance Revival-style design and historic use as a high-end hotel and apartment hotel. The interior of the Huntington Hotel features a variety of private and public spaces, including guest amenities such as the primary lobby and a restaurant on the first floor, a contemporary spa at the basement level, various meeting rooms and offices on the second floor, and guest rooms throughout the remainder of the tower on the third through 12th floors. The finishes are a combination of historic and contemporary, the most recent dating to a 2013 renovation. Historic finishes within the buildings, as evidenced by the historic drawings and images including limited travertine flooring in the primary lobby and decorative stair newel posts and a wood railing with decorative iron balusters at the primary stair. Upper floor corridors also evidence historic finishes in their plaster ceilings that feature periodically spaced arched beams with ornamental plaster caps and in their plaster walls that feature fire cabinet doors in the wings. The Huntington Hotel is locally significant under National Register Criterion C in the category of architecture as an excellent example of the Italian Renaissance Revival style applied to an early 20th century palace hotel. Designed by the well-known and prominent San Francisco-based firm of Weeks and Day, the hotel originally functioned as an apartment hotel, conveying the palace hotel typology, which was the most elite type of hotel built for those of high socioeconomic status. The hotel continues to convey its architectural significance and has a period of significance of 1924, the year of its initial construction. Today, most hotels in the United States are used for one purpose or the other, and although residential hotels have become less popular, they still make up a large percentage of urban housing. According to architectural historian Paul Groth, in the past, hotel rooms have provided indispensable housing units, sheltered important social groups, supported essential industries and businesses, and represented cosmopolitan diversity in American society. In San Francisco, hotel apartments were particularly popular, not just because they proved to be more financially feasible housing options for many, but because the city had a large quantity of hotels. During the Gilded Age, many cities saw the expansion of hotels. Between 1880 and 1910, San Francisco saw an increase from approximately 550 hotels to more than 1,000. Palace hotels were the first type of residential apartment hotels to appear in the United States. Unlike other residential apartment hotels, palace hotels catered to the wealthiest families from America and abroad. Many wealthy families chose to live full or part-time in suites at these hotels, in part due to the amenities offered, such as housekeeping and room service. The palace hotel's popularity as a residence lasted from around 1880 until 1945. For families at this elite level, a palace hotel suite was often only one of multiple places of residence, which might also include a mansion, estate, or a large apartment. Life in a palace hotel was no less impressive or proper than one in a single-family estate. When the Huntington Hotel opened in 1924, the elite reputation of hotel life, combined with the cost of rent for private houses, drew in many permanent residents. Residents enjoyed all the benefits common in a palace hotel, including the tangible items such as room and maid service, high-quality dining, and luxurious surroundings, as well as the intangible items such as social status and the assurance of privacy with easy access to social interaction. Although the building was designed as an apartment hotel, this was not its defining concept. Instead, the Huntington focused on its identity as a palace hotel, catering to the social and financial elite regardless of length of stay. Throughout its lifetime, the Huntington Hotel continued to be a destination for the elite and housed many celebrities and people of note, including Princess Margaret, Katharine Hepburn, and Gregory Peck, to name just a few. The Huntington's retention of all aspects of integrity enable it to convey its significance. This nomination was submitted by a consultant working on behalf of the property owners as part of a federal historic rehabilitation tax credit project. The city and county of San Francisco, a certified local government, were notified of the nomination and have provided a letter of support. The property owner, 1075 California Street Owner LP, has also provided a letter of support. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine the Huntington Hotel eligible for the National Register of Historic Places under Criterion C in the area of architecture at the local level of significance with a period of significance of 1924. La Puerta, located in Santa Clarita, Los Angeles County, is nominated as a California Point of Historical Interest. The site of La Puerta, the door, of El Camino Viejo, the Old Road, is located in the southwestern portion of Ellesmere Canyon at the northern center of Los Angeles County along State Highway 14 in the Newhall area of the Santa Clarita Valley, approximately 30 miles northwest of the City of Los Angeles Civic Center. The feature was located approximately 1,300 feet, a quarter mile, south-southeast of the intersection of Remsen Street and Los Pinedos Road, but nestled in an area which serves as the confluence of the San Gabriel Mountains to the east and the Santa Susana Mountains to the west. The range generally runs from the northeast to the southwest, physically defining and separating the San Fernando Valley and Los Angeles Basin to the south from the Santa Clarita Valley and other points to the north. La Puerta's historical significance as a passageway along El Camino Viejo, one of California's earliest overland travel routes, makes it a unique and culturally vital site within the Santa Clarita Valley. Located near the area where Beale's Cut, now California Historical Landmark 1006, would later be constructed, La Puerta functioned as a natural gateway through the rugged terrain before engineered roadways existed. Its importance lies in its role as an early corridor that shaped the development of regional transportation and trade between Northern and Southern California. As such, La Puerta represents the earliest known travel route through this area and is considered the most historically significant waypoint of its kind in the local region. As such, La Puerta is eligible as a point of historical interest as the first, last, only, or most significant of its type within the local geographic region. Because there is no particular historic resource to protect, the property is indicated as the site of La Puerta. The period of significance begins before recorded history in California, as part of its significance is associated with the indigenous people of California, and ending in 1854, when an improved wagon road eliminated the necessity for travelers to travel over the sharp crest and narrow path of La Puerta. Today, Highway 14, opened in 1963, travels through the approximate location of La Puerta at the edge of the Santa Clarita Valley. The property is nominated by the property owner, the City of Santa Clarita. No public comment has been received. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine that the site of La Puerta is eligible as a point of historical interest as the first, last, or most significant of its type in the geographic region, the Santa Clarita Valley, with a period of significance of time immemorial until 1854. This concludes the consent calendar presentation.
Thank you, William and Amy, for your well-crafted presentations, as always. Okay, it's time. Do we have a motion to approve the consent calendar?
I make a motion to approve the consent calendar.
Okay, we have a motion to approve the consent calendar. Do we have a second?
I will second.
Okay, we have a second by Commissioner Hess. Tara, can you please take the roll?
Yes. Commissioner Adams.
Aye.
Commissioner Brandis.
Aye.
Commissioner Hess.
Aye.
Commissioner Payton.
Aye.
Commissioner Schriro.
Aye.
Chairperson Hansen.
Aye.
Thank you very much. The motion passes 6-0-0.
Congratulations to all the property owners and preparers of the nominations. Are there any commissioners who would like to speak on one or more items on the consent calendar? Commissioner Serrera.
I'll make it quick, because if I have to let Alan go first, he'll say everything that I would have wanted to say, but way better. I appreciate just the incredible variety that this consent calendar included. The Tognini and Gezi building reminds me of what the first saloon in town did, which was provide a hub for everybody to get general and basic services. It might not have had the first phone, but it definitely had the first doctor or dentist, and that was always the bartender. So I like the fact that we're talking about the beginning of a community and where that originated from. With the Huntington Hotel, the statement that the presence of original design elements and building materials allows the building to convey its original use as a palace hotel kind of summed it all up for me. From a threshold perspective, we often talk about the way these properties convey integrity, and certain thresholds that are met or not met are somewhat informal. But when you talk about the features that they absolutely try to retain so that they can convey that feeling when you walk in and think this is a high-end residential hotel, and people who can afford to live there and have a big house somewhere else just because they want housekeeping and room service, it just, you can tell based on the photos and the way that it was written that that's exactly what they wanted to do. My last comment would be for the law library. There's a section in the nomination where they talked about the various directors and the prominent people, and Frank Howard and his mysterious disappearance in 1896. I tried to follow the footnote of what happened to Director Howard, and I couldn't get anywhere with it, but it just piqued my interest. What happened to Frank Howard, and why was he mysteriously removed? And I could only guess, but anyway, really appreciate the difference in the nominations and the fact that we had an opportunity to read about so many different properties. Thank you.
Any other commissioners? Commissioner Hess.
Well, as I'd like to remind people, we don't have any choice. The commission doesn't have any choice in what is brought towards us. It's just kind of a random mix of things that are out there that owners, community groups, whoever, are interested in, and through the different processes, they come to us, they're reviewed by our staff, and then we have them at each of our quarterly meetings. But I'm always impressed, nonetheless, with it's kind of a random process, but what a scope of ideas about the history of California come through even in this kind of random selection process. This time I was impressed by the role of commerce and entrepreneurs like the Tognini Getzi folks and especially the Corona Ranch as well. The creativity of these people, the drive which are represented in their buildings, their careers, their lives that we read about then and today. And from the simplest people, often immigrants coming to California or people, indigenous people who have been living here for a long time, to the very wealthy as well, all of these are part of California's history. And I do have to really love and appreciate the Bowman House by Lloyd Wright. I was really glad to see this come before us. Lloyd Wright is one of the most important architects of the 20th century in California. This is an example of his earliest work, and it shows how he is creating modern architecture. Now, he had a certain leg up on doing that because his father was Frank Lloyd Wright, and Lloyd Wright literally learned architecture at his father's knee at their family home and studio in Oak Park, Illinois, from when he was a young child. But Lloyd Wright was never an imitator of his father. He imbibed the ideas about modern architecture, modern materials, doing things in a new way that his father also expressed, of course. But he took it in his own direction, took it in a new direction. This building is an example of that. Even further, however, this building is an example of California's contribution to modern architecture, significant contribution. I point you to the date of this house, 1923. Now, Lloyd had come to California about 10 years before. He worked in San Diego. Who did he work with? He worked with Irving Gill, who we have talked about before, introducing modern materials, modern design to California. Why California? Because it was 3,000 miles away from the centers of architectural criticism, academia, etc. Irving Gill had the sense of freedom to do what he wanted out here, in that case in San Diego and also Los Angeles. Lloyd Wright continued that tradition. Again, I point to the idea to the year 1923. California had a major role in inventing modern architecture globally. The story is often told, it's often a bias towards the Bauhaus in Germany, which was formed in 1919, really got its bearings in terms of architectural design in 1926 when it moved to from Weimar to Dessau, Germany. Walter Gropius was the director as well, very influential in that. but that wasn't really until mid-20s. And here we have Lloyd Wright learning from his father, going in his own directions in 1923. And this isn't the only example. The Oasis Hotel in Palm Springs, 1924. He was on a roll at this point, taking new materials, and under no influence at all of what the European architects were doing at the time, he was creating very well-rounded, expressive ideas without precedent. They weren't Gothic. They weren't colonial. They were modern. They were 20th century. This house is such an excellent example of what Lloyd was doing at that time. I think in previous, within the last year or so, we also didn't we nominate the Mental Physics campus as well, also by Lloyd Wright, but of course from the 1940s and 1950s, showing the continuity of his creativity as he developed through the years. Just an extraordinary story. I do put him on a par with two better-known names, Richard Neutra and Rudolf Schindler, in inventing modern architecture, specifically here in California because of California conditions. The use of the textile block system was an inventive way of using concrete, which was just then being explored by modern architects. There are just so many aspects to this building, and I have visited it within the last, I don't know, year or two, and it is being restored, and I'm glad to see that with this nomination, it will hopefully get more attention for Lloyd's position. But there's an even larger story there. Again, the other themes in this random selection of buildings throughout California, the entrepreneurial character that really built California. The Corona Ranch, for example, and I really appreciate in the nomination talking about the operation of the ranch, it's how they looked at markets. They shifted their products, what they were producing over time, to meet the needs of the market at that time. They were relatively light on their feet. And this is perhaps another story, Agricultural California for a multi-property documentation.
that we talked about at yesterday's workshop a bit, because I do know also that the Irvine Ranch, again, which is now a city, but it was an agricultural ranch, much like the Corona Ranch, also was successful because it understood the commerce of the time and the response to it. They were light on their feet. It's something certainly to be celebrated as well. Just one more thing, one more of the nominations I wanted to point out in particular. I was also very pleased to see the LA County Law Library and its late modern style represented in the nomination. Again, part of this history of modern architecture talked about how Lloyd Wright and his organic architecture earlier in the century helped to start it off. Irving Gill helped to start it off. But at this point, when the LA County Library at mid-century was being built, California architects were still looking for new ideas, moving forward, being inventive and creative about what they were building. And what we now call this late modern style was an example of that. It was not Art Deco. It was not streamlined modern. It was not case study modern. It was something new coming on the scene. And John Austin was one representative of that. Of course, he also designed the Griffith Park Observatory in a previous style. This shows how he was, as a California architect, was evolving. Paul R. Williams, Wayne McAllister, S. Charles Lee. This is a whole field that I hope we'll, you know, get other nominations from in the future, to show the creativity of these California architects moving in a new direction based upon the conditions here, the population, the commerce, the industries, etc. Again, just great to see the recognition amongst our historians, as the young ones that we had earlier here today, but the ones who are working on these, and the willingness of owners to represent the or to promote the landmark status of their buildings. And one final remark, which is about the Huntington Hotel by Weeks and Day, also well-deserving. The nomination, however, did not. It recognized several Hollywood stars who had lived there, but it did not recognize that one of the residents was Mrs. Lewis Dinkelspiel in the late 1920s and early 30s. She was my great-grandmother. And she lived there, and my mother told stories of going across the bay to visit her grandmother at the Huntington Hotel. So I was glad to see this pop up on our list. Thank you.
Alan, thank you for always delighting us. I was going to say that the Huntington, I'm happy to see the Huntington Hotel on here. It's just such an amazing landmark for many family celebrations and people in San Francisco in general, from businesses to the community. And it's a historic tax credit project. It's been vacant since before COVID, so happy to see that on here, and hopefully we'll all be able to celebrate with a cocktail in the Big Four restaurant, if that's what they'll call it when it reopens. We'll toast your grandmother, your great-grandmother.
Thank you.
What was that, Dinkelspiel?
Dinkelspiel.
Okay. All right. Any other commissioners want to comment on the nominations? Looking that way, everybody's over here. All right. Well, we're always entertained and learned by Alan's comments. We come away knowing a lot more than we did about a variety of topics on American history or California history. And he also has a way of synthesizing the diversity of the nominations for us and kind of picking out themes that runs through all of them. So always welcome. So we're going to start with public comments on the nominations and with people who are in the room. And today we only have one. And that is from Mandy Benson of the Corona Foothill Ranch. You can come up to the podium and please restate your name for the record.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, turn the microphone. There you go.
Thank you. My name is Mandy Benson. I'm proud to be here today as a designee representing my mother, Myla Benson, president and founder of the Corona Heritage Park and Museum at the Corona Foothill Ranch. You know, I had prepared a whole little history thing, but you clearly all know the history of the ranch, and it's so nice to hear your nice words, Commissioner Hess. Thank you so much. What I do want to share is a little bit about what's happening today at the Park and Museum that we have there today. You know, the Corona Foothill Lemon Company was the last active major citrus grower in the city of Corona. And in 1988, the city of Corona adopted a general plan amendment allowing the gradual conversion of agricultural acreage to other types of land uses. Today, most of the groves that I remember from my childhood are completely gone. And what's left is thousands and thousands of subdivisions and houses, right? So we're so lucky today to still have, although we don't have the 900 original acres nor the 2,500 acres that came later, we are down to 4.5 precious little acres of the ranch that you saw today. In 2000, my mom, Myla Benson, with a team of incredible volunteers, some of who are here today, formed the Corona Heritage Park and Museum to preserve what was left of the original Foothill Lemon Company property at the Corona Foothill Ranch site. Skip. Already said these things. Today we have on the property an amazing community center with the Corona Heritage Museum, which not only has the history of the citrus industry there, but also the Corona Road Races, which began in 1913 on Grand Avenue, which is a complete circle within the city of Corona. And if you even just look at a map of Corona, most people are stunned when they see that map of Corona and go, what is this circle right here? That street was created for road races. And in 1913, you can imagine what those vehicles were like, right? So we have a really amazing display in the museum that you can come and see yourself. The volunteers have restored and utilized the three original foreman's homes on the property to house what is currently the Model Railroad Museum with a replica of Corona all the way out to Fullerton. So those of you from SoCal, you probably know that rail line. There's an arts colony there. There's a dance studio in one of those houses. The original ranch garages that used to hold carriages, tractors, and farm equipment now house artists in residence who teach classes to the community. There are plans to rebuild the historic Hotel Del Rey on the property. And I could keep going about all these 15 buildings, three sites, two structures, and all of the amazing community events, including school programs, antiques fairs, weddings almost every Saturday during the summer, businesses that rent space on the company. But, of course,
sorry, that
my time
your,
is up.
Signals your three.
Thank you all. We really appreciate everything you've done, and we want to make sure we appreciate Amy Crane for all the work that you've done. Thank you all.
Thank you. All right. That was all we had present. So are there any comments? I think we have at least a couple comments online.
Yes, Madam Chair, we have two people who have signed up. I am going to call on Jeff Miller first. I'm going to allow you to speak. If you would unmute yourself, you have 3 minutes.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can, thank you.
Okay, thank you. I just, nothing really long here. I just want to thank the commission and the staff for all the hard work in getting us to this point on behalf of Corona Heritage Park. I am one of the original founding board members 25 years ago, and I served on the city council as mayor 2 years, and then I served in the California State Assembly for 4 years. And the reason I bring that up is just in the capacity of my elected positions, we saw firsthand how this park impacted the lives of hundreds of elementary school children that come through and tour the park every month. And our docents do an amazing job explaining the history of the citrus industry in Corona and the state of California. And so I want to thank our volunteers that are there, Rosemary Caputo and Pat Atwood, and on behalf of Marla Benson, the president, I want to thank you for your consideration and approval. It means a lot, not only to the state, but to our local community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. All right, our second individual who has signed up is Marsha McLean. Marsha, I'm going to allow you to speak. If you would unmute yourself, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Good morning. I'm Councilwoman Marsha McLean, and I'm representing the city of Santa Clarita. And if you could see me, you would see the biggest smile on my face. And I just want to thank you. And I want to thank staff as well for the excellent presentation. The site of La Puerta is one of the most historically significant natural passages through the San Gabriel Mountains, linking Rancho San Fernando and Rancho San Francisco via El Camino Viejo. And, you know, one of the most important things that we can do is to preserve our rich heritage and cultural status that we enjoy in the state of California and locally for our children and for all future generations. And I just want to thank you on behalf of the mayor of Santa Clarita, the members of the Santa Clarita City Council, and the residents for your dedication in doing that preservation that is so important to all of us. So once again, just thank you so very much. Very proud to have the historical status now for La Puerta. And I want to thank your staff for their wonderful presentation and our staff for helping to get this done. Thank you so very much. And I look forward to other historical status in our area and in the state. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Ms. McLean. Is there anyone else online who would like to speak to any of the items on the consent calendar? If so, please raise your hand. Madam Chair, no one has raised their hand.
All right. Thank you, Jody. I just wanted to give a shout out to the city of Santa Clarita for the La Puente nomination. We don't always see nominations come forward from municipal government agencies. And I do also think, if I'm not mistaken, that we don't often have California Point of Historical Resource nominations coming before us. Is this the first one potentially, I think, in a long time?
They happen occasionally, but they are rare.
Yeah, they are rare at this point. So, and it's a fascinating research. I'm a big fan of anything that has a start statement or date of significance as time immemorial. So, okay. To discussion and action items. We only have one today. Staff will present the nomination and testimony will be taken from those who wish to speak on the item. Following this, the public comment period will close and the commission will deliberate. So before we proceed, is there any commissioner who wishes to recuse him or herself from hearing the discussion item?
No.
Is there any commissioner who wishes to disclose discussions with any parties regarding the discussion item? Okay. We will now hear, oh, I'm sorry. William, can you please give us the presentation?
Railroad Square Historic District, located in Santa Rosa, Sonoma County, California. This is additional documentation and boundary decrease. In 1979, the Railroad Square Historic District was listed in the National Register of Historic Places with 32 buildings, 2 sites, 1 structure, and 6 non-contributing vacant lots. In the 1979 nomination, the district was described as a homogeneous mixture of building styles and construction techniques not found elsewhere in the city that reflect its commercial development during the railroad era and the final onslaught of post-World War II freeway systems, which effectively divided the district from the central downtown area and allowed it to retain its links with transportation systems of the past. The district maintains most of its original composition and is relatively unaltered as opposed to the rest of Santa Rosa. Since that nomination and the subsequent listing, five buildings and one structure have been demolished, consisting of the circa 1885 commercial building, a circa 1900 warehouse, PMT Trucking, circa 1915 warehouse, circa 1920 warehouse, circa 1925 water tower, and the unknown date commercial building. The boundaries of the original district and the revised district can be seen in this image. After the listing of the Railroad Square District, a new commercial building was constructed circa 1979. In 1989, La Rosa Hotel added a one-story annex, and the circa 1885 commercial building and adjacent commercial building were replaced with a new building in 2005. Additionally, several contributing buildings underwent restoration, most notably the circa 1906 Lee Brothers Building. As many of these changes affected the integrity of buildings within the district, a new boundary was created, prompting this 2024 revision to the existing Railroad Square District. This amendment removes the five non-contributing or demolished buildings and structure from the district and revises the district boundary to exclude them. The amendment also provides additional Criterion A historic context information, but does not change the status of any properties within the district from non-contributing to contributing, or expand the boundary of the district. The existing district was nominated under Criterion A with areas of significance of architecture under Criterion C, commerce and transportation under Criterion A, and the amendment adds the ethnic heritage European area of significance, recognizing the contribution of Italian Americans to the history of the district. No amendment is made to the Criterion C statement of significance. The nomination was submitted by a consultant working on behalf of one of the district's current property owners as a required mitigation measure that is part of the environmental review process. Three letters of objection for one property within the district and one letter of objection for a second property were received. However, because the district is already listed, including the property owners by the owners submitting owned by the owners submitting letters of objection, these objections do not apply to the amendment. Staff supports the nomination as written and recommends the State Historical Resources Commission determine Railroad Square Historic District's additional documentation and boundary decrease eligible for the National Register of Historic Places under Criteria A and C in the areas of architecture, commerce, ethnic history, European, and transportation at the state level of significance with a period of significance of 1870 to 1929. This concludes the staff presentation.
We will now hear comments on this item in the following order. The nominator, 10 minutes. Property owner or owners, 10 minutes. District property owners, 5 minutes. Governmental representatives, 5 minutes. And the general public, 3. And we do not have any speaker cards in the room for this particular item. And Jody, do we have anyone online to speak?
Madam Chair, we have two individuals who have signed up for this item, and the first one I will call on is Stacy DeShazzo. She was the preparer. I'm not sure if she has specific comments she would like to share, but she did sign up, so I'm allowing you to speak, Ms. DeShazzo.
Hi, can you all hear me?
We can. You would have 10 minutes.
Okay, I shouldn't need that. I just wanted to thank everyone for the great work on this amended nomination from the state to the city of Santa Rosa, which was extremely helpful to our team on the project. It was a privilege and also obviously a challenge. But it's really important, obviously, to take a look at these districts when you get the opportunity and make updates. And unfortunately, we did lose some of the buildings, you know, years before. But now we have an updated nomination that's amended, and we appreciate this opportunity to also to make things to give you a little more context, right? To get a little bit more in depth and have a more robust and current nomination. So I just wanted to say thank you. I'm here if it's appropriate, if there are any questions. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. DeShazo. Also, Donald Lusty had signed up for this item as well. He is one of the property owners. Mr. Lusty, I am going to allow you to speak. If you would like to provide comment, you can unmute yourself and you would have 5 minutes.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Oh, great. Good morning, Commission members. I'm Don Lusty, Director of Development at the John Stewart Company. We are a development company that builds affordable housing and manages affordable housing throughout the state. And I just want to thank the commission members for their work on this nomination, which, as Stacy indicated, was a condition of our NEPA approvals, which were required for the federal funding that allowed us to complete this project after something like a 20-year period when we first bought the site. It's been a long road, but I'm happy to say the building is complete. It's leased. It includes 129 units of affordable family housing and 33 units for formerly homeless folks. And we saved large parts of the cannery and incorporated them into the building. And I think it looks great. And I want to thank you again for all your work. And thank you, Stacy, for your work on this. It's been a long haul and I appreciate it. And I'm happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Thank you, Mr. Lusty. If there is anyone who is online who would like to speak to this item, please raise your hand. Madam Chair, there is no other one to speak.
Okay, so we have all of our online speakers.
Yes.
Okay. I just want to ask one more time if there's anyone in the room that would like to speak on this item before we go to commission discussion and action. All right, we will then move on to commission discussion and action. Do any of the commissioners have any comments?
I mean, I'm hearing the motivation behind why this happened, why this is being, sort of explains a lot to me. I will say that yet another hurdle that affordable housing developers have to face sometimes are things like this, in which it seems clear that the change in boundary is warranted, and yet the process still had to go on. Unfortunately, I'm sure that they had to spend money for this study, and as a result, we get one or two less units, affordable units. So it's a really important. It's important when we're facing a housing shortage that we make sure that there aren't irrelevant, what do I mean by relevant? Areas of the district that are no longer appropriate to be in the district, and that therefore we are able to do other things to fill in those empty spaces, make a city, and also provide affordable housing. So I'm strongly in support of this.
Any other commissioners? So, all right, if we are closing the discussion, then do we have a motion?
I'll move to approve the item.
We have a move to approve by Commissioner Brandis. Do we have a second?
I second the motion.
All right, and then we have a second by Commissioner Payton. Tara, can we have a roll call?
Yes, Madam Chair. Commissioner Adams.
Aye.
Commissioner Brandis.
Aye.
Commissioner Hess.
Aye.
Commissioner Payton.
Aye.
Commissioner Schroe.
Aye.
Chairperson Hansen.
Aye.
Thank you very much. The motion carries 600.
All right. Thank you, Tara. The next item on our agenda is the progress report on the National Register of Historic Places. All of the properties that have been listed since the last meeting are reflected on the agenda. The National Park Service Notice of Listings identifies those properties that have been listed in the National Register of Historic Places or determined eligible for listing. Properties listed in or determined eligible for listing in the National Register are automatically listed in the California Register of Historical Resources. Since the last regular meeting of the Commission, the Office of Historic Preservation has been notified about properties listed and determined eligible, and as I just said, these are in your agenda. All right. Do we have any commission discussion and action items? Anything the commission would like to bring up and discuss? We don't have anything on the agenda today. Next, we're moving on to public comments. Anyone wishing to address the commission about matters not on the agenda will be given 3 minutes to speak. We don't have any speaker cards here in the meeting room. And Jody, I think we have some speakers online.
We have one speaker online for a public comment, Luis Hoyos. Luis. So, Luis, I'm going to allow you to speak. If you would like to unmute yourself, you have 3 minutes. Are you there?
But am I unmuted? That's a very good question.
Mute. We can hear you now.
You can hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Fabulous. I don't need 3 minutes to say what I'm going to say. I just wanted to convey my thanks for a lovely ride with the commission. I'm going to miss you guys a lot in the future. And I wanted to just say that in the course of becoming an academic, public service like this, like the commission, was instrumental in gaining tenure, that horrible monster called tenure. So I learned a lot. This was very, very important to me, and I want to thank you all. I want to thank Julie and all the past SHPOs. Have a great rest of your meeting. Anytime you're in San Dimas, stop by. Wish you well.
Luis, it's Julie. Thank you so much for your comments. I want to say that we will properly fet you and a resolution in a subsequent meeting. And thank you so much for your amazing public service and dedication and just your friendship and always generous a generosity with your knowledge and information.
So sure. With that, I think we're going to close public comments, but we're going to open right away the commissioner comments. So stay on the line, Luis, because we have some commissioners who would also like to recognize you.
Thank you, Janet. Luis, this is Lee. I just wanted to say, please don't be a stranger to us, and all the best to you and Ivan. You will very much be missed.
I'd like to double that sentiment. Luis started the same time I did on this commission, along with Janet, and I would come in fired up, thinking that I had read all these nominations and found errors in all of them, and I was going to spend my time explaining myself, and then Luis would start off in a very calm, articulate way, say, no nomination is perfect, and it unlocked my shoulders as I started to realize that I'm reading these things the wrong way. And he was an incredible mentor to me without him even knowing it, in the way that he was able to synthesize his information, explain it well. You could tell that he had taught students forever because he just had a way of letting you know that it was going to be okay. And here's how the process works, and here's what he thought, and it's okay to have those little errors and problems with the nomination because the overall goal was to demonstrate that a property can convey historical significance and that we're learning about it, and then we get to put it up for display on a state or national register that you could then read about. And it just changed my perspective immediately. And so we'll miss you terribly. We welcome Neil into the spot, and congratulations on entering into a dynamic that is just, I feel, outstanding. And Luis contributed to that, so we will miss you a lot, and we hope the best for you.
You're too kind, Adam.
Yes, Commissioner Brandis.
Luis, I'll save a proper goodbye and thank you when I see you in person. But just echoing the comments, you definitely will be missed. I came on the commission right when you left your first term. But then I'm not sure if you remember, but we got a chance to visit your house, and I think it was relatively one of my first or second meetings. And in your office, I saw a wall of commission binders. I'm like, oh my God, this is what I have to look forward to. So, but anyhow, as others have said, you know, every time you spoke, you know, I learned something and enjoyed, you know, the commission time with you, as well as, you know, the traveling time with you and the workshop time. But again, I will thank you better in person. So take care.
Commissioner Hess.
Yes, I agree with everything the other commissioners have said. I'd just like to add that I was always looking forward to and impressed by Luis's insights into individual nominations, and especially his tone in talking about them, because basically we're talking to the public here, and I really learned a lot and appreciated that. Also, I would have to say that over the years, I've talked with a lot of architects or architectural students in different places around the state and so forth, and I ask them, where do you go to school? Many of them would say Cal Poly Pomona, and I would ask, did you know Luis Hoyos? And they would always say, oh, yeah, and I took a course from him, and I learned so much. They were always enthusiastic about having been a student of Luis's, and that, to me, says a tremendous amount about what you've contributed to California architecture. Luis, thank you.
Any other commissioners? I just wanted to mention I've already had some exchange with Luis on my own once I found he wasn't coming back. But as Commissioner Brandis mentioned, he had served, was it a whole 8 year term previous to being reappointed in 2017. So I think, you know, his previous experience and knowledge of the process was certainly conveyed to all of us during my time on the commission. And I again appreciate his demeanor, and his knowledge of his subject matter is amazing. His contributions will be greatly missed at every meeting. So thank you, Luis, and have fun cruising. Because I know that's what you've been doing, and I know that's what it's called, cruising. So enjoy. Anybody else? Closing comments? Okay. Do any commissioners have comments on things other than to Luis, since we're in commissioner comments? Okay. Thank you. Julie, you have a comment?
I just wanted to say congratulations to Neil for your first meeting. Well done. Welcome. We're very happy you're here.
Yes. Thank you. Don't get used to that.
And if it seems I have no comment, doesn't mean I won't make comments in the future. It just seemed premature.
You got to get the feet wet, kind of get the feeling for the room. All right. Well, I guess if we are done with commissioner comments, I will adjourn this meeting of the State Historical Resource Commission at 10:33 a.m.